Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
I'm pretty sure it's a Wednesday. What if it weren't?
What if I told you hindsight is always 20/20?
The Minnesota Timberwolves select
Stephen Curry.
That everything happens for a reason.
With the first selection in the 2005 NFL draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Aaron Rodgers, quarterback in California.
What if I told you it's time for What If Wednesday on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
What might have been, could have been, would have been, here we go. We suspend reality and we dare to ask the questions, what if X, Y, and Z happened. For X, Y, and Z, we go back to the studio. We've got Mr. Lucas.
Hello.
Getting us up and on today. What's going on, Lucas?
Hey, guys. Not too much. You know, just trying to stay safe and healthy. You guys get it.
Do the same.
Cool. Isn't it crazy to think that the Super Bowl was only 2 months ago? Isn't that wild?
Very yeah. crazy.
It seems like years.
I think it was Grant Liffman who tweeted that 1 month ago today, like, Eric Paschal was defending teammates for taking shots. Like, that was 1 month ago today where I think the Warriors beat the 76ers at home, or the Nuggets in Denver, wherever it was. It was one of the only decent wins of the entire year, and Paschal came away like a leader. And by the way, I think Paschal's going to be joining us tomorrow, a little forward promotion.
It's 4 o'clock tomorrow.
A month ago feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. So the Super Bowl was over 2 months ago. What if the 49ers didn't blow that 10-point fourth quarter lead in the Super Bowl? How would it impact this offseason and kind of how we're looking at the roster heading into this draft and what's happened with Buckner, all that?
George Kittle wouldn't have been asked what he thinks about Jimmy Garoppolo, not once. There would have been no debate as to who the Niners quarterback might have been. There would have been no traction at all for the Tom Brady to San Francisco rumor that tried to gain traction but was fool's gold to begin with, I really believe. It would have been something that fans were still basking in. And not knowing when the next slice of sports is really going to come our way, what an important last slice that might... People could have eaten and dined out for a long time on a Super Bowl, not knowing where our next slice of sports is really coming from.
I think that's all right, and particularly the Jimmy Garoppolo part. I mean, I think that would be the biggest noticeable difference is Garoppolo would be getting love instead of questions right now. But I think in terms of roster movement, it wouldn't look all that different because this roster sort of had the offseason experience of a Super Bowl team. You know, they had to trade one of their best players because he was going to cost too much money. They had to probably pay a bit of a premium for a guy who's not as good. Although I like Eric Armstead just fine, that's a hefty bill that they signed up for there. They gave Jimmy Ward a pretty good pay bump. Like, the guys they held on to, they had to pay more, and they had to lose a significant piece because of money. That is what happens to Super Bowl winning teams often as well.
I think I would have been sick to death of the 49ers had they done that, because all we'd be doing is ever talking about them. Because I remember how sick to death I was of listening to what a genius Bill Walsh was in 1982. That said, Buckner doesn't get moved. There's no traction on Brady. This team probably doesn't even trade up.
You don't think Buckner gets moved?
No, I don't, because I think they'd be so sure that they could solve the cap problem otherwise that they likely would have done the more conservative, safer move is keeping Buckner and maybe moving Armstead. Although even though Armstead doesn't get you the 13 pick, I think they would sit there and go, we're good the way we are. I think losing that game makes Kyle Shanahan think a bit more dynamically about the future than he does if they win. I think their roster would be a lot more static than it is now, and it's pretty static as it is.
Yeah, I think I disagree. I'm not sure you can avoid, if you want to build the team the way they want to build the team, I'm not sure you can avoid trading Buckner. That just strikes me as something where it's a decision made regardless of, because that doesn't immediately, obviously, I don't know. The defense is the thing that got them to the Super Bowl, and they've made that worse. Like, to me, if they were going to make a move in almost a place of desperation, and I know you're not saying desperation exactly, but in a place of we've got to get better or else, I think it would have been more dramatic to the offense. It might have been a Jimmy Garoppolo move. To me, the Buckner move is representing how secure they are in the rest of their defense.
Win or lose, I still think they're looking at an incomplete offense in terms of production on the outside, and they might, in a draft that's heavy in wide receiver, be looking to trade up into the middle of the first round still. So I could see how Buckner would still be traded, and he's the guy that would get you there. Or I could also see them say, hey, we just won a Super Bowl and give Dante Pettis one more year to work on it. Trent Taylor's coming back. Maybe Emmanuel Sanders is retained. Man, if he catches that, if he is the hero, if he's the guy who caught the pass from Garoppolo, maybe moving on from him is just a little bit more difficult than it seemed to be, or maybe they still make that decision. But it would have been a feather in the cap, in the trophy case. And
definitely Garoppolo would be getting no criticism.
It would have removed the specter of, do you think Jimmy can play? It would have removed the talking point. And people love that talking point. So thank God for them that didn't happen, because this is all those people have sometimes. All right. Question numero dos. Lucas, what do you got?
Guys, last week we talked a lot about how broken the NCAA system is, just in terms of scholarships and all that, the idea of shamateurism. I don't think there's much argument there. The question is, what if we paid college athletes? Not everybody, but at least, the stars of the big programs playing football and basketball. Could it work?
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of money. When you got billions of dollars, there's plenty of money to go around. Now, you'd instantly be courting arguments that were, based along who's worth what, and are you going to pay the women, even though there is a small handful of women that actually turn an actual profit for their athletic department? It becomes more of a business in a zero-sum game. It would deny some athletic opportunities to some people. But it would also, I think, rejuvenate interest in college, because you'd have more people looking at it as a serious step of that any professional was going to take. You'd have more people looking at it as, all right, kid, well, you better produce now. There'd be more pressure.
And I think you'd have more kids willing to stick around at a fair price for the development, as opposed to saying, what's the point of staying here? I can just develop in the pros and they're going to draft me high anyway.
Right.
You might have more kids with a few bucks willing to stick it out an extra year or two. And also, here's the thing. To me, there's two separate ideas. One is, can we pay players? And as the question points out, that's very complicated. There's a lot of logistics involved. And as you point out, Damon, if there was not some very established rules in place, it could really do damage to opportunities for non-money-making sports. And you would not want that to happen.
Right. I can't imagine
the easy thing.
We're paying quarterbacks and we're still fielding a women's hockey, a field hockey team. You know what I mean?
You either have to build a complicated system that ensures you can still field a women's field hockey team, or, and this is probably more likely in the short term at least, the easy thing to do is just not pay them, but let them earn. You don't have to pay a guy to let the quarterback at LSU get a deal with the local pizza shop where he makes a few thousand bucks, you know, every couple weeks for doing ads or something like that. Let them at least capitalize on their own fame and notoriety that comes from playing the sport.
Right. And before any one person wants to say, well, but then you're just creating a market for a black market, that's what exists right now.
Right. You're creating a, you're moving a black market into the sunshine, and that is generally a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we're talking about here, because the players that are going to get paid under any system are the players that at most places are getting paid now. Where the squeeze would come is in places like Iowa, where they're, you know, it's not nearly at the black market is not nearly as developed for a place like Iowa State or Oregon State. What it would mean is ultimately that the 70 teams that are in the Power Five conferences would suddenly become 40. And schools on the margin, and I suspect that Cal would be one of these, would probably sort of become this second tier of Division I football and Division I athletics, because unless you're independently wealthy like Stanford is, if you're relying on the school in general to pay your freight athletically and you don't have a list of really deep-pocketed donors, you have to scramble, and I think you'd see about 30 of those 70 schools suddenly become, I'm trying to think of a parallel, but more like Central Florida. And I think that's one thing that scares the hell out of the powers that be in college sports, because they want this to be a nationwide sport. And I think one of the things that scares the hell out of them, wrongly, but I think it's going to scare the hell out of them anyway, is that they're going to become more of a regional sport than they already were.
Let's go ahead and open it to the audience. If all of a sudden we're paying quarterbacks and point guards in college, what do you think the immediate ripple effect through athletic departments would be? 888-957-9570 is the number. We're going to be taking your calls coming up next year. Brought to you by Chilton Auto Body, committed to helping maintain a sense of normalcy. All 12 Chilton Auto Body locations remain open to support you, and we'll pick up and deliver your car when it's ready for the road. Schedule an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. That is ChiltonAutoBody.com. If we paid the big men on campus, what would happen to the rest of the kids trying to play sports on campus? 888-957-9570. We've also got George Sedano joining us. Don't you go anywhere. We got a great hour around the corner for you here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Again, if big men on campus started getting paid, what would that do to the rest of the athletic department? We said we'd take some calls on this, 888-957-9570. We've also got George Sedano from ESPN joining us from down in Los Angeles in just a minute. But let's quickly say hello to Austin in Folsom. Austin, you called in for the question we asked. What would these athletic departments look like if we started breaking off paychecks for point guards and quarterbacks and wide receivers?
Well, I love the question, first of all. The only effect I see, I suppose, financially on paying these athletes comes down to the universities themselves, and the competition would get better. It kind of reminds me of that 30 for 30 they had on SMU, the Pony Express, and a lot of these smaller universities are already paying $1 million to go play in Alabama so they can get some TV rights. So I think allowing these guys to get paid would increase competition, because let's say a small private school that banks, you know, $100,000 for tuition a year, I know that's probably more than any school, but you get what I'm saying here. I think it would increase competition, and I'd love to see it personally.
Well, I mean, how about this? Let's say I have always wanted to go play at Ohio State, but Ohio State has a quarterback who is a sophomore that they're paying and will be there for the foreseeable future. So I'm good enough to get paid as a college quarterback and be a starter. Would you be willing, instead of waiting for your opportunity to get paid at Ohio State, take the opportunity to play and get paid right off the rip at a smaller school? And I think, yeah, when you talk about more talent, landing in more places, maybe that would be a good ripple effect of it all. Ray, Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the caller makes an interesting point. Like, that there is a lot of money in college football, even at the non-big schools. And if you're talking about getting paid a similar amount to start at a small school versus to ride the bench for 2 years at a bigger school or better school, maybe that's more appealing to guys.
Well, I mean, think about what just scholarship restrictions did for the MAC conference. The competition and the quality of football that is now in the MAC conference, which is substantial, quality was breathed life into that mid-major conference when, you know, Woody Hayes wasn't allowed to have 133 kids on full scholarship at Ohio State anymore. You know, so that we've already seen smaller schools get the trickle-down effect of fewer scholarships, fewer opportunities to get paid. Might even be an even bigger boon for some of the smaller schools. We'll get back to all of this in just a moment. But right now, George Sedano from ESPN Los Angeles is good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. George, good to have you on. I know that you are saying that you had a good show today, a happy and pleasant show today from one host to another. How are your shows coming out happy and pleasant through this whole COVID-19 crisis? What are you doing down there?
Hey, guys. Sorry if it's a little loud behind me. I decided to go for a walk. Mrs. Sedano and I are trading places with the kids after the radio show to take advantage of going out for a walk. She gets the first walk after the radio show, and then I get the second walk here in the afternoon. But look, here's what we've been doing, man. Like, honestly, I feel like there's been enough news most days where you can find ways to have that discussion, right? And look, I haven't been a big calls guy in a long time, but I think that at least early on during this process, right, the first week or two where people were just scared, like nobody knew what was going on, everyone was freaking out. And look, there's still some of that, but I think some of the panic has subsided. I think that we were just taking calls on letting people know in their community, like, hey, if you know somebody who's, you know, got a restaurant open and is delivering and is providing goods and services, like, we were doing that at first.
Yeah.
And then we got to the, and we were providing the information from a sports perspective. Hey, this is canceled. This is being canceled. And same thing with just the news early on, whether it was national news, world news, local news, there were so many things happening so quickly that, you know, you just kind of went into, you know, this mode of just going by your gut, right? And you went with what you felt was right. As time has gone by, again, sports news has trickled down, and we've been able to kind of, you know, look, for lack of a better term, at times manufacture some really good radio, right? Like some fun radio. And it also, I think, allows us, sometimes we get so bogged down with sports that it allows us to maybe inject even a little more personality than usual, right? Have fun, talk about stuff that's happening in each one of our lives. Because let's face it, we're all dealing with stuff right now that we've never dealt with.
No doubt.
And certainly experiencing things that are very different than we've probably ever experienced ever.
Hey, we've never got to experience a post-show walk with George Sedano, but we're getting to do that right now. So there it is right there. So the NFL draft, if nothing else, represents hope for every NFL fan base. I'm hoping that it'll be a pleasant distraction for us when it comes. We're about to find out which team has got a really good IT department, which teams are lacking in that category. When you think about all the moving pieces and what could go wrong, there's an awful lot that could go wrong. Which team are you prescribing the most difficult draft under these odd circumstances? And what else about the New York Jets?
That's always my go-to, okay? Listen, I grew up in Miami. There's a lot of transplanted New Yorkers there. They invade South Florida all the time. So I spent a lot of my career having fun at the Jets' expense. So, yeah, I always expect them to have some sort of issue. And I'm certainly not the biggest Adam Gase fan by any stretch of the imagination. So he doesn't seem too technologically savvy to begin with, just from the little I know of him. I would say this, too. Look, it wasn't that long ago we heard John Gruden talk about using a flip phone, right, or something to that extent. So I'd be a little worried about him on Zoom, too.
How much of a break have you been able to take from Tom Brady? I know he reared his ugly head again today, but Are you feeling more invigorated about your career choice knowing that you can talk about him less than you have before?
That's funny. I'll be honest with you. I've been very selective on what we talk about Brady because, yes, I do think that the initial stuff about, oh, my God, he's going to leave and where is he going to go, I think there was some intrigue there. But then once they went to Tampa, I was like, okay, it was worth having a segment or so to talk about it. But it's not like I was spending shows talking about it. Not in L.A., at least. So I think that that was a bigger issue for us when I would do shows like Around the Horn or whatnot. And we're doing those shows digitally at the moment. So, yeah, I just think on the radio show, we don't spend much time at all. I mean, I talked about it a little bit today. And here's the thing I took away from it today. Because I went back to listen to the Stern interview. And I felt like for the first time in his life, at least since I've been watching or following his career in the 20 years he's been doing it, he came across as the most relatable I've ever heard him, which is, you know, talking about his wife, right? And his wife saying, hey, you got to pull your weight in this marriage. You got to do stuff with the kids. Like, I understand you're super hyper competitive and super focused, but you know what? So am I. Like, you know, I am or was the top model in the world. Like, there comes a lot of responsibility and financial responsibility with that. Like, we got to divvy this up a little better. And I think everyone in any marriage with kids can relate to that conversation. I know I sure as hell can. You know, people like us, we're not professional quarterbacks winning Super Bowls, but we're all very serious about our careers. We may not take ourselves all that seriously sometimes, which is part of the charm. But I do think we could relate to that kind of stuff. We could also relate to a bad relationship, right? And I think that he came across as relatable as I've ever heard him today. And I think that was the most interesting thing that's come out of all of this.
I know you talked to Jeff Passan on your LA show, and I'm sure you got into all the ins and outs of the alleged baseball plan to play inside Biodome. And I'm wondering, from that conversation, people have suggested that it's more of a trial balloon than anything. Does that seem true to you? And if so, are there any that you're aware of more realistic plans in consideration?
No, I do think it's a trial balloon. I do think it's something that baseball wants in the worst way possible, right? Because I think that they realize they're going to lose. They stand to lose the most of the big leagues in the sense of, I believe it's over 30% of their revenue comes from the gate. So they're already going to lose a ton of money. And I think they are trying in every which way, shape, or form to get back as fast as humanly possible and perhaps mitigate some of those losses, at least a little bit, by adding more national television games to their slate, right? And I think that, let's face it right now, whether you're ESPN, Turner, or Fox, if baseball gets going and they're playing 2 and 3 games a day, which is what they probably do if they end up doing this plan in Phoenix, though I don't know how feasible it is because, let's face it, it's like trying to hit a moving target to make sure all these things happen and also not feel like you're superseding what the public is getting as far as the opportunity to get tested and things of that nature. So you have to be really conscious of that from a social perspective too. But ultimately, I think that's the thing. They want to get back because they realize they may have the most to lose altogether, and they can potentially find a way to kind of mitigate some of those losses. And look, Rob Manfred said something similar to that when he talked to Scott Van Pelt a couple of weeks ago, that they felt like they were going to do everything in their power to get the season in. And, you know, he hasn't been as measured as Adam Silver. They clearly walked it back a little bit with that statement that they put out that none of this is etched in stone. But clearly they're having conversations. And I don't blame them. Everyone should be having conversations. That's what you're supposed to do as a leader. And I think Adam Silver's doing that, though he's just taking a more measured approach than any other commissioner at this particular point. I mean, for God's sake, we got Dana White buying islands right now to try to get fights. Like, this is, we're living in the wild, wild west right now. It's just insane.
George Sedano, Los Angeles here on 95.7 The Game. It's great to have him on. And I'll give Thomas Dimitroff all the credit in the world. He stopped and tackled Eric Dickerson at the goal line, short of his goal of trying to make this new logo not a reality. It's tough to stop Eric at the goal line, and it looked like he might have been close to overturning the Rams' new logo, but they gave him the Heisman. Did you think that Eric was going to go down in flames so hard?
Yeah, I mean, look, I know the Rams a little bit. I know that group, and I feel like even though I'm not a huge fan of their logo, it kind of looks like something the Chargers would do, to be honest.
It looks like a joint stadium. Like we're going to share the stadium, so we should kind of share a logo.
Right, exactly. And look, I wouldn't go as far as the phallic symbol that Eric Dickerson described. You know, though I can't unsee that anymore. but I do think that, yeah, I don't think the logo's great. I actually think the one that was created by the Twitter account, NFL Memes, was better than the one they created. And I said that on the radio. I'm sure they'd love that. But it's basically a combination of the one they have, and it's connected to the one of just the actual Ram. If they would have done that, they would have been fine. And because I get that people generally hate new things. When it comes to teams adding new logos or changing colors and things of that nature, more times than not, that stuff is met with a lot of resistance. But this one just felt like you pointed out, it just didn't seem very inspired for whatever reason.
George, you know, I'm looking at Stan Kroenke and the money that he has and the ballooning budget of his stadium, which is, I guess, supposed to be spectacular. I mean, it damn well better be for $5+ billion. But I got to tell you, if I were in the building a stadium business, it feels like the wrong time to be building a $5 billion stadium when most of us are afraid to leave our front yards.
Oh, man. Yeah. Listen, I had this conversation with somebody recently, too, and you know, it's a great point. I mean, who's going to want to go out and watch games? Like, I'm sure there are people that will be like, I don't care, I'll take the risks once they allow fans to come in. But I do think it's going to be a slow drip of people coming in. And eventually we will get back to that place where people are comfortable going to games again, regardless of where it is, whether at the NBA, you know, Chase Center or Staples Center or this new SoFi Stadium or wherever, right, or the stadium up in Santa Clara. Like, I think that people will get there, but it's going to take a while, I think. You know, I think that there are less and less, particularly out here, right, in California and Northern California and Southern California, there's not a lot of Mike Gundys around, you know what I'm saying, that are clamoring for football to kick off and practice to get ready in May. I think there are less of those people where we live than maybe in other parts of the country. So
Mike Gundy seems like a reasonable guy, doesn't he?
You know, it's funny, right? Like, he went from the guy, you know, God, it was well over a decade ago now, right, where I'm a man.
He was 40.
And we all had a blast talking about that and, you know, the mullet and all that stuff. But, man, yeah, he seems so ill-informed when it comes to this stuff. And I had Mike Wilbon on the show today, and he just lambasted him. Like, he basically said, shut up, Mike Gundy. Like, what kind of an idiot are you? Trust the science and trust the health, the health team around the president and the CDC and trust those people who are in charge of those particular divisions. Like, you're no scientist or a doctor by stretch of the imagination. It was peak mad Wilbon, which was just fun radio to listen to. But I think most people where we live are fairly reasonable and understand that. Look, I'm going to be straight with you. Like, I have a friend whose dad passed away, okay? And he lives in New York. He is a reporter, a news reporter at NBC in New York. His name is Adam Cooperstein. And, you know, he posted this on social media, so I'm not, like, speaking out of turn here. And, you know, his dad, he grew up in Indianapolis. Dad was in Indianapolis in a hospital, man, by himself. Passed away by himself. No one there but strangers. You know, nobody in his family could get to him, not his wife, who also tested positive, but the symptoms weren't as strong, and had to quarantine at home. Like, it's just sad. And this is the thing. Even though there are projections right now, guys, that say that this thing could be a little more optimistic, we're still talking about close to 100,000 people dying. And at the end of the day, you're talking about a situation where even if you don't know someone who has been directly involved with this or has been, you know, had someone in their family who's been tested positive, like, just know that the measures that we're taking here are helping all sorts of people not have the fate of someone like my friend Adam Cooperstein, whose dad passed away in a hospital by himself. Like, just know that now is not the time to loosen up. It's time to tighten the grip, because we're getting to that peak in a lot of places. And I think we've shown that social distancing has worked, because we've mitigated a lot of this, and it could be far worse right now, and it could have ended up being far worse than what it ends up, what it looks like it's going to end up being from a projection standpoint.
The Gundy thing, though, is fascinating because he may be alone among people in the football industry, explained in a minimum number of words what most football people think, which is we have kids who are not making money for us. We need to stop that now. Do you think there's going to be any long-term fallback on that level of cynicism and honesty from a guy who's done that time and time again? Or is he basically like every other football coach, as admirable as his record and as disreputable as his record if it's bad?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think in that sport, particularly college athletics, right, we've seen that as a coach, you can get away with a lot as long as you're winning games and T-Boone Pickens is happy about it, right? You know, they're big donors. And I think that that is really the person you're serving the most. And unfortunately, that's the reality of big-time college football and big-time college athletics. Although I was pleasantly surprised that Mike Sankey, the SEC commissioner, said, we don't have a timeline because the virus doesn't have a timeline. So I was very pleasantly surprised that the SEC, which, look, most people would feel automatically were like, oh, they're going to play football because that's like the best football conference in America, and they're football thirsty more so than anyone, but their commissioner took the right tack. So maybe I am wrong. Maybe Mike Gundy is, just acting as a rogue coach here, you know, and I know that Brian Kelly may have said some stuff too, right? Like, there's a few guys here and there, but I think for the most part, we're seeming to get some buy-in here from the guys that matter, even Nick Saban, who did an interview today on Instagram with our Maria Taylor. So, but to answer your question, I do think, yeah, unfortunately, for some of these guys, it is about wins and losses and not what they say or even how they comport themselves.
We have the announcement of Hard Knocks, if that in fact happens, covering both L.A. teams. My question is twofold. Number one, how bad has it gotten for Hard Knocks that they feel they need two teams just to get one show's worth of content? And secondly, is either of these teams dumb enough to give Hard Knocks actual material to work with?
Look, there's always somebody, right? There's always somebody on a roster. Maybe not the coaches per se, but there's someone on a roster who may or may not make the roster who is looking to become a star on Hard Knocks. We've seen that before in some way, shape, or form. And look, I also think that there are some guys who are also made men who can do whatever they want. So I think that there will be something to that. How has Hard Knocks kind of jumped the shark because they're adding two teams? That's an interesting question. See, my initial thought was because of the current situation, because of the potential of limiting practices, maybe not even having all that many practices because of the current circumstances, that they needed two rosters just to try to get enough film that would fill up a usual show for them. So I didn't go down that path. I kind of went down a different path when thinking about the two teams.
George, final question, and thanks for taking us on the entirety of your 6-mile walk with you. We really appreciate it. You cover the NBA for ESPN. You've done sideline work, of course. What are your thoughts on any horse competition and, like, how many of those we can pull off in a row and still pretend this is a great idea?
Well, listen, I think right now we'll take anything, okay? And I'm not the biggest video game guy. Like, I do occasionally play some video games, not as much as I used to. I'm a 42-year-old man with two small children. I got a lot of things that I got to tend to. But man, 400,000 plus people watched a handful of those video games that those guys were playing on NBA 2K. So, you know, Kevin Durant playing against Derrick Jones Jr. and, you know, Trae Young playing and Zach LaVine playing and DeAndre Ayton and those guys and Andre Drummond, Pat Bev. 400,000 a pop every time one of those shows was on. So I would guess there'll be more for horse than there are for video games. Maybe I'm wrong. I know the game is big on Twitch. I don't know how big it is on linear television. But I do think at least for a little while we can get by on horse. I don't know if that's a sustainable way of keeping the model going by any stretch.
stretch of the imagination. But I think George, right now, we'll take it.
Whatever corner you just turned, it got a lot windier. Thank you very much, though, for bringing us with you on your post-show walk. It was great to catch up with you. It's always good to have a guest who is a host in his own right. It makes for good conversation. Thank you so much.
You got it, guys. Anytime. Take care and stay safe.
Appreciate it. George Sedano from ESPN down in Los Angeles here on 95.7 The Game. Great guy to talk to. We talked a little bit about Mike Van Gundy. I don't mean to bring the Van Gundys into it. Mike Gundy, head coach at Oklahoma State. And I know a lot of you are saying, Damon, I do not care about Oklahoma State. I don't care about college. Do you care about somebody saying way too much? Because that's what he did today. Some really scathing commentary thrown back at him from some of the best in the business as soon as we return. We've also got Daniel Jeremiah coming up at 5 o'clock. You want to get ready for the NFL draft. You can't listen to anyone better than Daniel Jeremiah on NFL Network, at Move the Sticks on Twitter. He's coming up at 5 o'clock. And it's all brought to you by Radio.com. Make sure you download the app, Radio.com, favorite 95.7 The Game, and take us anywhere with you. And it's all brought to you by Fremont Bank, still open to serve the community they love. With full-service banking, no compromises.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.